Welcome to the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America with Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett. Take it away, boys.
And hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you, and we're coming to you on a pretty precarious week, for sure. Certainly a day in this week where we've got a lot of weather issues, and that goes from the polar vortex all over the country, and also it goes to California, where, God love them, poor people in Southern California, Los Angeles area, going through some terrible fires, and people being evacuated. So it's a lot of upheaval in our country, and weather-wise, and what's going on. People aren't having to deal with that are the ones that are playing on the PGA Tour, because they're in Hawaii, playing in the Sony Open, second stop, if you will, counting last week's Century. And but for a lot of people, kicking off the PGA Tour 2025 season. So yeah, weather's not their concern right now. Might be when they get home, but right now they're in paradise. And so we'll talk about that coming up on our show. Our good friend Earl Forsey with PGA Tour Radio will join us to dive in about what's going on in the PGA Tour. Fewer tour cards going to get handed out this year. So some changes being made, a little bit more exclusivity, if you will. A little more pressure for a lot of these guys trying to keep their tour cards or get their tour cards. And the LIV Tour, by the way, will start in February. So they got a few more weeks yet before they get going for the start of their 2025 season. So a lot of golf to talk about. And with Earl, we'll have to talk a little bit of Washington. The Commanders football team made it to the playoffs. And I don't know if Earl's ever happy, but this might be the happiest we're ever going to find Earl. So we'll talk to him about that as well. In the meantime, Frank Bassett in our Nashville studios. How you doing, Frank? You holding up against the weather pretty good?
No, it's cold. No, yeah? I hate it. Hate the cold. You know how much I hate the cold.
I know.
Can't stand it. It's 17 degrees in Nashville. I'm telling Oof. You, the cost of living here is out of sight, as everybody knows. Nashville, Tennessee has just gotten crazy. Well, guess what? The cost of living in Minnesota is a tenth what it is here. And it's the same weather. So give me the trade-off.
This segment brought to you by the state of Minnesota.
No kidding. I mean, yeah. Right.
Move to Minnesota.
Yeah, no thanks. Hell no.
Yeah, so I was going to say, you know, there's a reason why the cost of living is not much.
No. Ponte Vedra. Amelia, not Ponte Vedra anymore.
It's 17 where you are, and if you went to Minnesota, it would be 17 below.
Probably. Well, what's the difference? Right. I mean, at that point.
Maybe.
What is the difference? I mean, you're just, instead of Travis Matthew, I'm wearing Eddie Bauer.
It's still got a name on it.
And I broke out my duck shoes and my duck boots and, you know, geez, pulled out a big parka. I'm like, I'm glad I kept all that stuff. Yeah, it's really cold here. No golf, no golf. By the way, California, yes, we're so sorry for those people.
Oh, man.
And
I'm telling you.
Talking to my friends out there, and you know our good friend Laura Brina, recording artist and actress and all that good stuff. She lives out in Hollywood Hills. She was coming back. I think they were overseas somewhere, and she was texting with me back and forth last night that they've evacuated her house, and she doesn't think she'll have a home when she gets there. She's got a beautiful, multi-million dollar home, all glass on the side of the hill there overlooking the Hollywood, just gorgeous setting. Well, and that's where James Gandolfini was her next-door neighbor when he was alive.
Oh, yeah.
And Charlie Sheen lives right down the street from her. So all those guys are. And James Woods, did you see James Woods?
I saw him. Oh, did a video. Watching. And I think his house, well, at least last thing I saw, he had a neighbor shoot a video. And you could literally, he's one of those houses that has a pool that kind of is an edge of his property. And then it drops down off the hills. Yeah. See a great view and everything like that. The flames, his house was okay. And his neighbor was standing there by his house saying, right now, everything's okay. But the flames were coming up from that hill, like below where his went off. You could see, it was just a shift in the wind.
There's nothing
his
left
house
out there.
His house would have been gone. Yeah. So,
what about that one? What about the one scene where the guy was filming in his house and all the flames are all around him? Did you see that? And he's petting his dog, saying it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
Oh, I didn't see that.
No, it's horrible. I mean, that was gut wrenching to watch.
Did he get out?
Don't know. They, you know, Fox News. God bless those idiots. They show it and then they don't follow up with any of the detail of the story.
He was surrounded though.
Like, yeah.
He really couldn't get out.
He couldn't get out. And it's all glass and up on the hill and it's oh my God.
See, that's the thing. I've never been in that situation. Hopefully, I never will be. But if your house or your neighborhood is going up in flames, I get. your desire to save your house, right? Get a hose out, do whatever you can try to save your house. I know, but I'm saying I understand that desire to say, okay, especially for some of these that, you know, they've lived there a long time. They're $3 million, whatever. You've got a lot into this house. You
12,
know?
15, 20, 30.
So what I'm saying is, so you've got, I can see where you would, but at some point you've got to pull the trigger and go, I got to go. You got to get out before you're surrounded by flames. Because
well, you
they
know,
can't
Kennedy,
come and get you.
Kennedy on Fox, you know who Kennedy is. Yeah, used to be on, she came up through MTV. Her grandfather was in World War One, and she had, I think it was either Trace Gallagher or Jonathan Hunt. I think she had Jonathan Hunt, which we know. He's out there, right? She's there in the studios at Fox doing her show, and she just said, please, would you just go by my house, gave him the code to get in, and just get two things. It was some pictures of her family and his sword from World War One. And he got in there and got it. She was in tears on the five yesterday. It was, it's really bad. And we shouldn't belabor it too much. So, I mean, it's so sad. Yeah. Everybody pray for those poor people.
Yeah.
And pray that Gavin Newsom gets strung up for what he's done. I'm sorry. But, you know, all that money they did not use for those reservoirs, they should be hung for that.
There's a lot of people that are complaining that there aren't enough firefighters, right? I mean, they're bringing in people from all over the country, which they normally do, but they've had a cut back on, you know, and you wonder, what are you spending money on? And people need safety, right? I mean, I think
I don't need a little minnow. I don't want a minnow. I need a retention pond.
While you're spending other money on other things, and this kind of stuff happens, that's when it's going to fall down on the politicians and say, you know, if we had another 1,000 fire, maybe. But here's the tough thing about this, Frank, as you know, and if you've watched the videos, which you have, the winds are unbelievable.
Oh,
you
hurricane.
And I played golf in windy conditions, right? We played in 40 miles. These are 100 mile an hour winds that are blowing. Well, of course, then the ambers just flew here and over there. And so suddenly it jumped from Pacific Palisades to Hollywood Hills, which is miles
taking
away.
Taking out a couple of beautiful country clubs already.
Yeah, but it just goes up in the air and then falls down. And if it's so dry, all it is an amber falling on your backyard and it starts your yard up. I don't know. It's terrible.
It is tough. Think about the air quality too, and all the carcinogens that are in that air now.
Yeah,
because
a lot of toxic air.
Oh yeah, it's bad news out there, and God bless those poor people.
So,
but don't move to Tennessee. Okay, just don't do it. rebuild.
We're full.
But this
time,
when you're rebuilding Malibu, you bunch of yahoos, don't build them butted up against each other.
That's the problem.
That property is expensive.
Yeah. So expensive, every inch.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
I'm amazed by that sometimes. You look at the houses in Malibu, which, as you said, are quite literally townhomes, right? Yeah. I mean, they're right on top of each other, and they're $25 million, $30 million, whatever. I'm like, oh my! And it's all because, boom, there's an ocean.
Well,
I get it. I mean, that's your view. The houses are just right on top of each other.
I've not talked to my friend Peter Asher. You know, Peter from Peter and Gordon, producer and all that. I've not talked to him because his house is right there, and David Foster's house is right there. Last time I was out there to see the guys, and so I've not talked to them, so I don't know. I need to probably send a text. I just hate to. I just hate to hear what's happening to our friends.
I saw that
people we don't know.
I hate to hear it. A lot of people. I saw. And that's the thing. Everybody's kind of hearing about celebrity houses. I saw Billy Crystal's house burned to the ground.
Yeah.
Eugene Levy, John Goodman. I mean, a lot of actors and musicians and whatnot. And they showed. There's nothing left. I mean, we've all seen it, Frank, where houses are.
Yeah.
And these were multi-thousand square, beautiful homes.
Oh.
And all you see is a fireplace or, you know, a fire.
Maybe, yeah.
The chimney's left. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, that's all that's left of
these.
Well,
what about all the people who had no insurance because State Farm pulled out of California.
Yeah.
Because the California government wouldn't let them raise their rate. So they said, okay, we'll see you. We're gone.
Well, here's the other thing, Frank. And I know we're talking a lot of weather here, but it is kind of the big stories going on. And you talk about moving to Florida, but look at how they get hit.
Oh, the
waves of hurricanes just keep coming in, right?
Yeah, but it's different. I mean, it's a little different.
Well, it's different, but it still devastates and takes your house away.
Well,
they had two in 10 days that just hit this. I mean,
at one time, I owned three houses in Florida, Tim. Fort Lauderdale, Tampa, and Ponte Vedra. And that one year, we were hit three times. All three of my houses suffered damage from hurricanes.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that I'm so filthy rich I can buy three houses. I inherited one from my parents. I already had a house, and I had another house I used for rental some. But Yeah, it was really bad. So anyway,
that's what I mean.
It's, we're going to talk golf. Really, I promise we're going to talk golf with Earl Ford when we bring him in. So
It is. By the way, Frank, you know, we're talking about the guys who are going to be playing starting this week. Later, well, what is today? I guess
Sony
today.
Thursday. Yeah,
they'll be playing. Which is today.
Yeah,
they'll be playing. That we're coming to everybody at the Sony Open, and as I said, they've gotten it a little bit tighter now. You know, we've seen that the rules are changing. They're making it a little bit more exclusive. Uh-huh. Instead of 125 tour cards, down to 100 for the FedEx Cup. Only 100 from the FedEx Cup this year, down from 125, making the most significant change in eligibility in the last 40 years on the PGA Tour. So it's harder and harder to get and keep that tour card. And we all know it's a very superstar-laden league, if you will, right? The top 20 guys, we all know. You get past those 20, and there's a lot of guys that
don't know.
And their names are Keith Mitchell and on and on and on, but they're very good golfers. But those are the ones that are just back and forth.
Cashmere,
right?
Keith. Yeah.
Yeah. Trying to keep their card, trying to get their card. So it's very exclusive, but it's also very challenging. And they're all saying, okay, we know the rules. Play well, and that's how you got to do it. But they're cutting that pie up pretty tight now, aren't they?
I mean, yeah, they are.
Keep your tour card. Whew.
Yeah.
Competitive.
They are. Let's get Earl on with us and let's get his opinion.
And then you and I can take a break.
One or two, three. I'm just going to say, by the way, we need to bring up the fact that they're talking about changing the name back to the Redskins.
Yeah, he'll have an opinion on that.
Maybe,
I don't think he was ever fond of the Commanders. I don't think he liked that.
Who does? Who likes that?
Yeah. I don't know.
That's
stupid.
They're the Washington Redskins, for God's sake.
Well, I kind of, it still comes out of my mouth a lot. You know, when you just say it, it's hard.
Among other things these days.
It's hard to change it. So, all right, we will take a break. And the voice of PGA Tour Radio, Earl Forsey, will join us to talk about that, the Commanders / possible Redskins, and everything else that comes into Earl's head when we come back. You're listening to Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett here on Golf Talk America. And we will return right after this. And welcome back to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett coming at you. And
hello.
As we talked about, a lot of stuff going on around the country. But as golf goes, it's happening in the out in the Pacific at the Sony Open. And a lot of guys out there, everybody almost is out there that needs to be out there trying to make sure they get as many points, as many dollars and everything else for keeping their card, FedEx Cup playoffs and all that. As we said, it's getting shrunken down a little bit. So it's going to be a little bit more difficult. So, yeah, I think they're going to play as much as they can play. So it should be fun. And as always, the weather we bring up, but the weather's bad around a lot of the country. Watch this weekend and you'll get a little taste of paradise. You can at least turn your TV on and see some Hawaii, some dolphins or whales out in the ocean and get away from it a little bit, a little escape courtesy of the PGA Tour.
Palm trees. Warmth.
Joining us now is Earl Forsey, voice of PGA Tour Radio, who will be doing the call, the play-by-play for the Sony Open. Earl, we haven't talked to you in a while. Happy New Year. Happy Merry Christmas. How you doing?
Doing great. Haole makahiki ho. Why New Year? Yeah, so that's what we're doing, starting a new season.
As only you can say.
I can't say it.
Vince Scully, holy makahiki ho. The old, you know, what I grew up watching, Vin, you know, in Hawaii.
Vince.
So yeah, guys, good. I'm okay being with you today. As long as we get done before kickoff Sunday night, I'm good.
But, who's playing Sunday night?
Is there a game? Sunday night, Earl?
Yeah. The Redskins are playing.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, it's playoffs, Tim, so I know you're not paying attention much anymore. But it's playoff game.
Neither am I.
Yeah.
We're playing musical general managers right now. So, you know, we have three general managers on the payroll and two coaches that are gone.
We will get to football in a second, Earl. I promise you. We'll get to that. We can't leave it off. But in the meantime, some changes are happening. It seems like golf is a lot of stuff keeps going on, right? And it keeps happening. Right. And they're going to minimize the number of exemptions. It's going down from getting your tour card from 125 to 100. Talking about the guys at Sony, and I was reading some articles, and the guys were saying, we got Camilo Villegas was saying, it's going to be really competitive, but that's cool. We know what we got to do, and everybody's got to play well. It does seem like, and that's my question to you, is golf kind of going to settle down a little bit? Because it seems like we've had a lot going on, whether it's LIV Tour, PGA Tour, the rule changes, different things happening now with getting your card and keeping your card kind of things. It seems like there has been a lot of changes. Are you ready for it to kind of settle down a little bit and be normal?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think look at all other sports, right? Too, it's kind of a constant change. And I think golf was unique in the fact that it was, you know, there was not, and it wasn't really probably needed for a while. It was status quo for a long time. But look at college sports, how much they've changed.
Oh my God. Yeah.
My God. In the last like 2 to 3 years, you know, and it's all sports. So in golf, you know, the PGA Tour specifically has had to do that now over the last few years. I think it's good. I mean, it's tougher for the players. I mean, like you said, you're down to 100 guys now out of the season. And we haven't really talked much about that. We just started last week with the Century, and this week, the first full field event at Sony Open in Hawaii. But, you know, as the season goes on, certainly that's a storyline because, you know, we've gone, when I've been doing this a while now, and, you know, so I go back doing this specific role, hosting for Sirius XM, it was before the FedEx Cup playoffs when I started, you know, moving in and doing stuff like that. So, I mean, we're, you know, almost 2 decades into that now. I mean, is that crazy? But remember, that was such the FedEx Cup playoffs format, it's like you're earning points, and that was such a difference for the existing, you know, tour folks, players, you know, and everybody that watches, the fans. Like, well, this is just, how is this working again? Now it's just, that's what it is. And basically, for the most part, all these players, that's all they grew up with now, right? The FedEx Cup era, that this is how it works. You play and you earn your spot in and the top seven, they know all the, like, you know, it was for a while, you just had to explain to people, okay, top 70 get here and the top 30. Now, I mean, do I have to, if you're a football fan, do I have to, maybe some people, believe me, I have to explain the format to you. Some you do, but you know, golf fans and the players certainly have gotten used to all this, but this is not the first change. I mean, I think that's what we look at. Time flies, you know, when you're having fun.
I'm going back to football. I think the kickoff is the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah, I know.
That's so stupid.
It's college. It's the overtime. It's like, let's line everybody up at the two. And you got to go for 2 points after one time. There's so many rules.
I know.
You know?
There's
so many rules. And so that's my point is that other sports are doing it too.
Yeah.
It's not that with this. I think, you know, almost 20 years ago now, when you changed the FedEx Cup points, it was kind of, how is this working again? And what do you need to do? 500 points and what it means. Everybody's kind of used to that, right? Now you just don't.
You remember when Steve Sands had the whiteboard and it took him 30 minutes to explain what was going on? Yeah. Those days
I was on the air, Frank, doing my own mental whiteboard. So Sands is doing his own thing on TV. Absolutely. You know, that's the way the elections work too, you know? And now you're on your phone getting instantaneous, like, you know, exact percentages of, for the most part, of, you know, what people have, who's winning, who's not. And so you get this instant information, and that's the way golf has become with all these stats and everything else. Yeah.
So Earl, do you think is it driven by TV? Do you think it's driven by TV? Is that what we're all trying to, all the executives in every league, golf, football, everything else, are they trying to accommodate viewers to say this will make it easier to follow? Is that a big part of why there's changes?
I'm a longtime radio guy because I got in this business when there wasn't really not much TV for guys like me to do with sports. But yes, I think everything is driven by television because you know, we're in Hawaii. The big kahuna is TV. That's where everybody's bread is buttered. Every sport. I mean, there's a reason the NFL is what it is. And it's not because people love the uniform changes, you know,
although we do,
we just had a week in the NFL over the holidays where there was an NFL game on Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Yeah.
Five out of six, you know, so, there you go.
And all different kinds of platforms.
All on TV, but it's not just TV. I mean, PGA Tour's got a great relationship now with Netflix and all this and all these, you know, streaming services. We have seen a lot of sports move in that direction, and more and more. Netflix is doing more and more. Yeah. I'm available if they need people.
aren't we all?
Let's sort it out there.
Yeah. But it's great because it's you go from a I tell you why too, because it's become so mainstream, and we all do that now. We watch. Look, and I talk about this because I'm a technology guy, you know, and I just remember, and I'm a sports fan because my dad was a sports fan, and mainly football, but you know, he was a huge sports fan in general. But that's why I got into sports. My dad. Strange that my sons aren't as way as not nearly as into sports as I am, and I do it for a living. But I do it for a living because of my dad. But it was just, you know, it was all these pipe dreams of like having a. We had the old channel master, you know, at roof antenna. Everybody did. I had the 13-inch black and white Panasonic TV. It was actually, I think that was 19-inch. That was the fancy one. That we'd roll from the living room into the kitchen so you could sit at the kitchen table and watch. Right. It's on that cart. It's on the shaky cart that the screws were always never really tight. And the thing would shake back and forth. Right? Yeah. Everybody had those. And the two antennas and then the little bow tie that would sit there for the U.S. So, and then, you know, we'd watch games. You know, my dad would have to try to dial it in without the ghost. In D.C., I'm in a market where we did get to watch games because games were always sold out, but a lot of TV markets didn't. And that was the thing, the game changer in the NFL was, you know, a Sunday ticket. Yep. Now you can watch your home games, but I have always been able to do. I'm fortunate. I'm lucky. In my market, I always have been. But, you know, now it's on your phone in 4K. I mean, it's on the iPad. Right. The stuff looks great. And so, but that's all online. We're online. You can just click on it and go. Yep. And now it's not shaky. It's not, jittery for the most part. It's not, but anywhere you are, it's perfect. It's great picture. So that allows you the portability, like radio has always been, and still it's the great, you know, advantage of radio. And radio is passive. You don't have to sit there and watch it. So it's really part of, I'll be honest with you, and I know this for my locals, because I still do work at 106.7 The Fan. I'm still on the air there. I still do, you know, Sunday mornings and sportscasts. But post-COVID, actually, the COVID shutdowns actually was a boom to talk radio. And because people didn't have a lot of options. They were out a lot doing other things or working from home. And where everybody thought, you know, radio's dying and all that stuff. No, it actually had a resurgence. And part of that, but like podcasts, you know, what is podcasts? It's AM radio, right? It's talk radio. And everybody loves that. Yeah. So, but that delivery system now and all this other stuff, TV Plus is what I call it, whether it's Netflix, YouTube, all this other stuff, Amazon Prime, that stuff now is not, you're not just limited to a US audience. You're getting a global audience now with that.
Right, you know? Right.
WWE just went over to that, and that was their thing. They're getting a global. It's not just if you have cable and watch it on USA. Now anybody in the world can watch it. That expands your audience size pretty quickly. You know, there's a lot of people outside the United States.
We're huge in Australia, aren't we, Frank? We are the number one golf talk show in Australia. Seriously,
there you go, mate.
So I love it. There you go, mate.
Go, mate.
Yeah,
trip on the Bobby.
Have an egg.
I've got Australian.
Now we're mocking them, Frank. Yeah, we're mocking them right now as they're listening to us. We love our Aussie fans.
We love our Aussie fans
with apps and everything, and it'll happen. And we have it with my local is on. You know, the family of stations, and you hear from people from all over the world.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, not a lot, but you do. I'm here. I love listening. So really? You think really? It's just the reach.
Crazy.
It's crazy for someone like, you know, like me. It came up and all you're looking at is what were the numbers locally? How many, you know, where's your station rank every quarter? You know, where do we rank?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It's, you know, it's, you know, 100,000 an hour or whatever, 200. Ours is 221 per quarter, by the way, locally. But so it's not bad.
not bad. Not bad.
No, it's really good. But different markets, different things. So yeah, long story long. Yes, it's all, I think in that it's all about the coverage because you're trying to expand the sport globally and the PGA Tour. You know, you hear us talk about it a lot if you listen to the coverage about the global game. You know, it's one of the big things. And I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but we always do every week. And it's like, now on a PGA Tour, it's players from like 83 different countries and territories, right. I think. And, you know, look at your top 10, you know, players when you have guys like, you know, Rory McIlroy leading the way. And it's this, it's yes. See, that's the thing. So because you've got all these global stars playing in the U.S. and now all this stuff, you're trying to reach those fans that may be fans of those guys. That, and part of the PGA Tour's growth, I think I've talked to you about this, has been, you know, international coverage on television for years, you know, and it's like that in all sports. But, you know, the Players Championship is a huge global event, certainly in Europe, I know, because it's the flagship event. It's prime time over there. You know, that's the other thing. And people forget about that. You know, yeah. The stuff that's on during the day here is like people are home in prime time, like Thursday, Friday nights, watching Saturday nights, watching this stuff. And they get hooked on it because they love golf. They love the game. They see the stars. And, you know, while they, you know, after dinner, they get to watch it. Right? I mean, that, yeah, it's all of the above, really. And what this does, though, you go from 125. So people that don't know, only the top 100 now at the end of the season lock up their cards. Yeah, right. It was 125. Yeah, right. But, you know, it used to be 125 to get in the playoffs. Remember where you started?
Right.
You know, that got you in the FedEx Cup playoffs, and they would trim it down. Now that's down to 70. You know, it's 70 used to be
to start.
70 used to be the early days of the FedEx Cup playoffs. 70 was the third event, I think. It was 125, right. 100, then 70, then 30, right? The four, if I can remember it right.
That's right.
So, yeah, get I love these. I always have these sayings. I use them. They're all movie lines or, you know. From comedians or whatever, but what this is not, it's the Yogi line. It's getting late early. I always use that because it's true. So it gets late early on the PGA Tour because you start the year and you know you got to be the top 100. Hey. And to be in the top 100 now, you know, with these, you know, signature events which are enhanced points and extra points. The winner last week, Matsuyama, got 700 FedEx Cup points. When you get 500 for a win, so the winning those events is worth almost, it's almost one and a half of a regular event. Scottie Scheffler won four of them last year. So, you know, that's why he was so
and
far.
Three and a half like, million in front each
of
one.
Yeah, in front of everybody. So, yeah, and it's tougher to get in those events. So you've taken eight events a year now. You've got to really be the best of the best and have to have the right numbers, either having won or being the top 50 to get in those signature events. And then, you know, now that's made it tougher. Last year it was, especially toward the end of the year, you saw a lot of guys playing a lot of golf because they had to to earn their way into the FedEx Cup playoffs, or the thing we had in the fall, which was the continuation of the season after the playoffs were done. The FedEx Cup fall where guys fighting and they weren't going to get in the playoffs, but they were high enough to get in those, some of those fall events, or use those fall events to be able to keep themselves or play their way into the top 125, which quite a few did with those wins and the way they played in the fall. Now you've got to be in the top 100.
Benchum was a soothsayer because he used to say, play better, play better, play better. And it's come to pass. You've got to play good now. There is no gimme. It used to be tough. Yeah. Now it's even tougher. It is just
it's harder for players to exist on the PGA Tour, you know, to just kind of exist and play and, you know, like we all do, earn a living, right?
Yeah.
It's tougher because that path is a lot tougher.
You're going to eliminate the journeymen. The journeymen are going to be eliminated.
God forbid you get hurt.
Some would say that's not a good thing. Right. Well, all these, you know, we talk about every week, this guy came out and this guy, you know, missed a few months. If you miss a few months, that's it for you.
You're
right
over. That's what I mean.
Unless, you come back and you win one.
Do it. Scotty, stay away from glass. You know?
Carving a turkey, and he carved his hand instead.
Last year, you know, you're talking top 70 in the playoffs, and now, you know, winning a tournament may not be enough. It was. You won a tournament. Okay, you're good. You're going to be at least have a chance at the end of the year. Now, and, you know, there's different levels of tournaments, too. And obviously, some of those on weeks where there's majors or something else going on, it's fewer FedEx Cup points. But now winning a tournament is not guaranteed if you just, you know, miss cuts the rest of the year or don't play well. I mean, that's where it is. And it's a good thing, though, because I think the success, those signature events was, let's get all the good players together a bunch of times throughout the year at certain, you know, scatter it throughout the year, not just everybody early in the year, and then in the summer when all the majors are happening, it's let's get everybody together, you know, top players. Here are these prime events, these And that's a goal. And it worked last year, guys. I mean, I think it did.
Now,
Scottie Scheffler won most of those. I mean, half of them.
It didn't matter who's in it. Yeah.
You know, like you said, play better. But the whole point is all those guys were there and playing those tournaments on, you know, the top events, those great courses, Pebble Beach, and then in all this stuff. And it was throughout the year. It's won basically every month-ish. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, in addition to, and the Players is now one. It's always been the signature, the flagship event. You know, that's another one. Obviously, all the guys are going to be there, all the top players. But so now you have these, through the year. I think that part of it worked. You know, I don't have to fight my way in the top 70. I know that's a lot different for a lot of guys. And I think that's where the change is, you know, a wake-up call at some point. Because, you do have to change your approach sometimes, your events you play in. We saw, I think last year too, some players playing events that they normally wouldn't play or because they had to play them, you know, they weren't in. If you're not in a signature event or you're not in the first two, you got to play these other ones because there's ways of getting in those signature events if you play well in some others. And, you know, every month there's the Aeon 5 and the top 10 you have as well that gets you in those events if you're not otherwise qualified. So that's the other thing. Those are springboard opportunities to get in those big events, but the signature events is what I'm talking about.
Right.
To build those point totals up and to make yourself put yourself at a level where you can be in the FedEx Cup playoffs. And now that number has been cut to 70, all of a sudden the overall number of players earning cards from the season is cut down to 100. So this season, I would think, is a lot different for a lot of players that have to kind of approach things differently because it's always, well, we have 36 events to go. Now we're down to 35, but those go quickly. It sounds like, my God, 36 events, that's a marathon, and it is, but that end of the season comes pretty quickly. It really does.
Because sure does.
We're doing the 36, but other players are not, obviously, players aren't playing that much. Even at for the most guys, what is it, two-thirds of that, you know, in a couple of dozen range. And then you have players who aren't, you know, at that level or not in all those events or not playing that much. They're down to, you know, in the teens, right? Maybe teens are 20-ish for some, and some players it's less because they only get limited events. So that 36-event season goes quickly because for a lot of them, it's not anywhere near that many events they're playing, right? It's over the course of a year, but it's a format that, you know, the structure, I guess, is the proper way to put it, that I think fans are, you know, have gotten used to pretty quickly. But it really, to me, it started FedEx Cup points era is really when we want to talk about changes. That was a drastic change. And it was such an outlier back then. There were some people that wondered, was this going to work? You know, and it's par for the course, really, to use
so to speak,
right?
And it took a while.
NASCAR's doing the same thing. But NASCAR piggybacked on that. You know, they're doing the same thing with their points and all
points,
that stuff.
Their points.
It was like, hey, that's, you know, okay, well, because it's tough in those sports, that sport, this sport, tennis, something like that. It's tough to, you know, because you don't, you know, winning games. It's not based on records, right? Like other sports.
Yeah, they're still in the playoffs. Are they still playing tennis?
And I tell somebody you, is. Any way they do it, it's to me a lot better than getting a committee together in a hotel room to select the top 12 teams or whatever college football.
Oh,
right?
God.
I mean,
don't even get me started on that one. You know exactly where
right?
I'm going to go.
Mean,
Ole Miss should have been in there, period.
Oh, my God. Hey, oh, my God. Here, let me reset. Let me reset. Hang on a second. You're listening to Frank and Tim. We're joined by the voice of the Sony Open, Vin Scully. He's with us. And we appreciate it. But I do want to ask you, Earl Forsey, PGA Tour Radio, what is the, give me a couple of storylines. Now we've got Scottie Scheffler. Can he repeat? Can he get into that Tiger atmosphere of several years of doing what he did last year? Because it was phenomenal, but then it's always referenced to Tiger and go, well, Tiger did that seven times kind of year in his career, not just one time and gone. So he doesn't want to be Scheffler, a David Duval, you know, pick a name, who had phenomenal years, BJ, and then, you know, kind of went back to normal. And can he keep doing that? Or Jordan Spieth out for so much of the end of last year with his surgery. Is he back? How's he going to play when he comes back? What do you think the storylines might be for people to listen to?
Well, Scheffler is the one, right? I mean, that's the main one as far as, you know, because sports is, and it's golf too, it's about stars. And there's your number one guy by far. He is, you know, LeBron James, Michael Jordan, Tom Brady. He's the guy that's the face of the PGA Tour right now. And the way he goes about it, it's not flamboyant. It's not, you know, there's not a lot of drama, if at all. It's all kind of workmanlike and solid. You look at him, he just goes about his business. Then you look at the end, the numbers at the end, it's like, oh, you know, 9 under par and he had every green. And, you know, it's just all these numbers add up, all these like number one in all these statistical categories, which is why he is, you know, so dominant, but he just doesn't give that impression. We always talk about the eye test, you know, on the air in DC and with teams. Everybody wants to put out the numbers and the analytics. I understand that, but it's the eye test, right? Look the part. And sometimes, you know, you'll see Scheffler miss. I know he straightened it out last year, and when he needs to, he makes them. But he'll miss a lot of these putts, and he's, you know, not. And the back foot comes through, the Scheffler shuffle. And sometimes it doesn't look like it, but man, you look at again. Did you win the game? It says what were the results and the numbers? The results for him were great, and yeah, you're right. Look, everybody, that was a great year. And everybody that knows a lot more about it than I do, we'll tell you, all the players I work with and everything, that was, you know, as good a year as a full season start to finish as, you know, that was right up there with what Tiger Woods was doing in his prime.
Yeah.
Was it quite as good? I don't know about that.
No.
It's pretty damn good.
It was pretty damn good. Right. You're right. And that's the other thing. Part of it is just the look of it, right? I mean, Tiger would
Tiger did it in dramatic fashion. I mean, it was right, always drama.
We always say Seve swashbuckling, right? There was a flair to it. There was a flair to the Tigers. Yeah. It was Tiger. That wasn't just Jim Smith, you know, winning a bunch of tournaments. It was Tiger freaking Woods. And there was a way he did it, right? So that's different, yes. But in the end, it doesn't matter, you know. The numbers are the numbers, and we see great players not be able to do that with that consistency. Consistency still matters, and in this game, it matters maybe more so than others. The way you go about it is, you know, it's the individual, and it's not a game where you can go out there and, you know, dance after a touchdown and stuff like that. It's a different game, but. You know, and you're not throwing 80-yard passes all the time and scoring touchdowns like that and you know, hitting, you know, 14 three-pointers or whatever. It's different. But there is a, you know, he's found such a comfort zone, Scheffler has, that, and he's so consistent at a lot of things that he's not going to fall off. It's not going to, well, that was a great year. What happened to Scheffler this year? I don't think that kind of player. You're not going to see a drop. Can he keep up what he did? That's pretty hard, you know.
All right.
But I brought this thing up with last week, and Schauffele was, you know, in the century, and Scheffler would have been there. He had not hurt himself, his hand, and hopefully that's okay. But those freak things, you never know. You know, I mean, that's the thing. That's why you have to avoid those freak things. But Schauffele, he was playing last week, and we were going through his numbers, which were unbelievable, that he had, like, basically, you know, top fives, like, almost every tournament at the end of the year, and two major championships, and I don't know how many team top tens he had and everything, and wasn't even close to Scheffler for, like, overall season, right?
Right, right.
Numbers that would have been, man, what a great year, and then Scheffler's like, you know, here. Here's my season, you know?
Yeah.
And from the perspective of the PGA Tour, it was great hand, but here's mine. Yeah. So that's how good a season it was, because the guy went out there, had a career year, and I'm throwing Scheffler under the bus. I'm just saying, there's a guy who had a great year, a career year, won his first couple of majors, played maybe some of the best golf he's ever played, and wasn't just those two tournaments. It was all year for him, and he, almost at the end, he couldn't even touch Scheffler for the season. So that's how good a year that was.
And by the way,
a big story.
And by the way, I think, too, and Frank, I'm curious what you think about this. I think Scheffler showed his true mettle through all the great year things he did last year at the Olympics. I think when he, which he really, really wanted to win, it's a very unique thing to have a golf gold medal, right? Obviously. Tiger got one. A lot of guys are never going to ever have that. And he had to go, and he went in the final round against some of the best players in the world, obviously, and shot a 62 and wins the gold medal coming from behind. I think that showed not only does he have the skills, but the mindset to say, when I need to, I can pull out the phenomenal round that I have to in the final day of a, in this case, a major event like the Olympics. I think that not only showed the world, but I think it even showed him that he can. He can kind of pull that out, turn the switch when he needs to. And I thought it was amazing. And it was also great that he teared up and everything else. I mean, you could see how much it meant to him to win a gold medal at the Olympics. And I think that might be the impetus for his, you know, even going forward for the rest of the year, but down the road for his future, to know I got that. And it's kind of a unique thing to know that if you're Tom Brady, I can drive the length of the field in a playoff game and beat the Washington Commanders. That's the kind of thing that I think that's my segue for you, Earl.
That was a nice jab there, Tim. Yeah. Okay.
The last time
he beat the coach, he beat the coach of the Commanders.
The last time Washington was in the playoffs.
Before we transition to football, and I do want to talk about it real quick, and I know you guys, you know, I've already overstayed my welcome here today.
No.
But you're right, and that Olympic thing, and yeah, I should have brought that up, because he had a year, I mean, with all those wins and then the FedEx Cup and Olympic gold medal, and he's on the President's Cup team. I'm not a betting man, but I would never bet that he would have another season like that. I just, how can you? Because first of all, it's got to happen in those Olympic years every 4 years, right? It's one of those seasons that may be I'm not saying he's not going to have good years, but that year that he had, 2024, I don't know how you match it ever. And you've got to deal with that, right? You got to think that was great, you know, and you can do it again. You can win a bunch of tournaments again, but putting all those trophies on your shelf in 1 year. Wow. I mean, that was great. And the other flip side of the story very quickly is who's going to challenge him, right? Who's the guy that's going to step up? Right. I imagine Schauff, he's one of those guys. McIlroy. Okay. That's the guy you're looking at, right? Can he step up and amp his game to that level? I don't know.
He needs a head doctor.
He should be able to, right? But he hasn't, you know.
We thought he could, but 10 years now.
Who's going to challenge him? Or is it one of the other guys? Is it a kid like Oberg or something like that? And that's, you know, but again, McIlroy now is one of those guys with a little bit more of the flamboyance there, right, that people like, and so it's all the – I'm not trying to say the same names because it could be somebody else that just came on tour. Who knows? But and there may have to be one of those guys, those younger guys. Because like I said, now those guys come in. This is part of the other story. It's been the story of the PGA Tour, all these guys winning and young guys and the Korn Ferry Tour promotion. You get right back on the tour in the fall and you win. Matt McCartney did that. So, you know, those guys came up in a different era where you can't ease your way into a golf career anymore. You know, you used to be able to do that. And maybe there weren't quite as many guys that were, you know, you were vying with for a golf career. Now there's a lot more sharks in the water and there's a lot less reward there for players to split up. So that's the other thing. These guys are coming in like hit the ground running, you know, Oberg, top five player, first year on tour and a Ryder Cup. You know what I mean? It's like, so that's the dynamic that's changed too. So we might not know who the guy is to challenge Scheffler, but that's what you need in sports. So you need someone to push him
that's
a little
the NFL
bit.
Quarterback.
That's the other big storyline, and that is the big one you see on TV, the shadowy figure with no face and a question mark. Like, who is it? The mystery man, right? Who is that that's going to be this year to maybe push Scheffler? And I don't have the answer.
That's the NFL quarterback syndrome right there, though. These young guys coming out of college. I mean, look at Joe Burrow's stats. Oh my God, this year. I mean, really? Good Lord.
But some to your point, Frank.
Or a rookie quarterback that comes in the NFL and is already a top five quarterback in the league. Something like that.
Daniels. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, there's our transition. Yeah. There's our transition.
There it is. Right,
NFL playoffs. NFL playoffs, baby. Get started this weekend.
Yes,
and there's some other games. But the game we're going to talk about is Washington. Last time they play at Tampa Bay, the Commanders on Sunday night. The last time, and this is for everybody but Earl, because he knows everything, times 12 when it comes to Commanders, and we do, but last time they got in the playoffs, it was ironically against Tampa Bay. And it was a guy named Tom Brady during a COVID year, if I'm not mistaken, Earl. And
yes, it
was it an empty crowd? Was it an empty stadium when the Commanders?
Yes, it was. Yeah, I'm trying to think if that stadiums were empty by then. They might have been doing that thing where
every other seat.
Yeah, where they had like a smattering of fans and possibly by then. I can't remember, but yeah, they should have been. Hey, you know what that was too? That was Ron Rivera's only successful season here, and he was 7-9. What does that tell you about the 4 years he had here?
He could get a job at Tennessee.
He's interviewing for jobs. Good luck. Yeah, go for it.
So is Vrabel. Sure. Vrabel's out there interviewing now, dude.
Well, Vrabel's a good coach.
Biggest mistake we ever made is letting him get out of here.
Of course, of course it was. Of course
nuts.
It was.
Nuts. I love
it. Of course it was. But who didn't know that, right? There you go. There's a situation. I don't want to harp on Titans, and there's not the only one. There was a power struggle there, and the guy they chose to stick with, they just fired Rand Carthen.
Yep.
Yeah. So
exactly.
Yeah. Could have, would have, should have stuck with the other guy.
So what do you think about Dan Quinn?
You can back that up even further because I'm a huge, although he's a friend, I'm a huge Jeff Fisher fan and always was. Yeah. I thought he did a really good job here. Yeah, he just had his hands tied a lot of the time.
Yeah, nobody won, had a .500 record more than Jeff Fisher. Nobody won 8 games like Jeff Fisher did. I know.
Maybe
Jason Garrett.
Best you can hope for.
If Ron Rivera was a worse version of Jeff Fisher. if you want to finish .500, hire Jeff Fisher.
But look what he had to deal with. They wouldn't give him an offensive line, period. Wouldn't let him have the money. It was terrible.
Well, we're a quarterback killer.
We're a quarterback
killer. It can be like a Jeff Fisher situation, right?
And I will tell you this. I will tell you this. If we've got the first pick again. Here we go. The Titans are going to get the first pick. If they get Jackson Dart, I'm going to shoot myself right on the 50-yard line because they'll destroy him like they destroyed every other quarterback they've ever drafted.
Well, it's situation. It is. The quick Jeff Fisher thing here. You know, there's a DC. There's a little the bone to pick with Jeff Fisher because he was the Rams coach. He was the Rams coach. When the RG3 trade happened, they traded everything to the Rams to get that pick, to get RG3 and Fisher, they ended up with 12 players or something out of that deal. I don't think any of them actually ever really turned out, by the way. All those picks that they had, they blew. But Fisher, the first time they played, it might have been the next year or the 2 years after that, it was here. And all the guys, the team captains for that day were, it was a move that I would make. But it was kind of a smarmy move. Fisher trotted out all the guys that were part of that trade, like the draft picks that he made.
Yeah.
She trotted all those guys out for team captains for the sauce and it rubbed people off here. But I appreciate that. That's kind of a knife in the back. But so
that's Jeff.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah. I was gonna ask you about Dan Quinn. You can thank the Cowboys. And you'll never do this, but the Cowboys were very gracious in letting you have Dan Quinn.
Covered the team when Norv was here, so we've been through this before.
There you go. So did you expect this from Quinn, to go from 4 wins to 12 wins in one season?
No one expected 12 wins. I can tell you right now. Maybe a couple of people that called, Commanders, we're going to win 12 this year. Okay. But my theory on this was always, and you obviously know how I feel about the previous regime coach/GM. Not only could he not coach, he couldn't pick players either. So they change everything. You've got a new owner, new general manager, who's great, former San Francisco guy. Everybody wanted Adam Peters. You've got a new coach. But he brings in an all-star coaching staff, too. Cliff Kingsbury's here as the offensive coordinator, former NFL head coach. He brings in a bunch of other former coaches as assistants. Ken Norton Jr. is here. The former NFL coach was in San Francisco a long time. The heavyweight fighter's son who was in Dallas for a long time as a player. So all these guys are here. He's got the previous guy had brought in last year a guy that never coached in the NFL before as their defensive backs coach. He was a high school coach. You wonder why they stunk last year? And this is totally different. So they're adults. Professionals running the game. But part of this whole thing, Tim and Frank, is the whole vibe changing. Everybody nationally, even if they didn't know why, they hated the old owner, right? So the new owners come in, and Magic Johnson is one of the part owners, and he says everybody loves Magic Johnson, right? I mean, but the new owner has come in and like done things the right way, and they've changed things out there, and it's no longer, you know, it was always one of the worst facilities and all this stuff, and they're going to change all that. They're going to build a new stadium, new facility, and all that. DC didn't even want the team. Then the new ownership comes in, and then they're changing laws to get the land back in town, inside the district, inside the Beltway, to get the stadium back to basically where it was, and that's going to happen. They just signed the bill the other day on Monday. So all that's changed. It's gone from the hated franchise and people like, you can't root for the Commanders. If you do, you're that kind of guy. You know, you can't wear a shirt. You know, it's like you're evil if you root for. No, I'm just a football fan. Sorry. And I root for the team. And I'm not going to root for the guys up I-95. I will never root for a Baltimore team ever in my life.
Can't
ever.
Stand the Ravens. Can't stand them.
We can't either. And a lot of people changed over because, oh, they're winning and everything. Yeah, well, okay, fine. How many Super Bowls has that been? Oh, two. They've got a quarterback that's about to win, have a third MVP, which is one more than MVPs, and he's won playoff games. So people like to appreciate unimportant things, and personal awards in sports are unimportant things. So the whole vibe has changed with the team. And all of a sudden, and now the one thing people hear for a while, because there's a generation, 30 years of football fans that grew up without winning here, in essence, right? And they don't know how to act. They don't know how to act when the team is successful. And they're always, we got to watch out for this game. No, you don't, because your quarterback's going to throw 5 touchdown passes and you're going to win, okay? Don't worry about the primetime game. We always lose these things. No, you don't. Not anymore, you don't. I grew up with the New England Patriots being a doormat, a bottom feeder.
Terrible.
Right? Laughing stock. And
like
then
Tampa
things changed.
Like Tampa.
And was. Then changed, yeah. Things changed, right? So here's your thing. There's a lot of layers to this. You're right. The last game was Tampa. It was here. It was Brady. It was the Brady Super Bowl run. And they had that team, again, it was Rivera's first season. They had just drafted Chase Young. It was one of the many. They had no quarterback, and they called this kid, you know, off his sister's couch, Taylor Heineke, who was out of the NFL, a small college quarterback,
he was,
you know, the little quarterback that could, is what I called. You know, and he's got a little moxie, a little guts, and ran for the touchdown, had to dive to the end zone to give themselves a chance at the end, but they lose. And then you see what's happened since then. Blech. Right? So the coaching staff, you're right, is great. Did anybody expect this out of them? No, not 12 wins. Who did? It's a 4-win team. They had a horrible roster. And again, on top, you know, it was the old John McKay line. It was asked, what did you think about the execution of your football team? He said, I'm all for it. Remember that, the old Tampa Bay head coach?
I remember that.
And then his other line was, what was it? We didn't block anybody, but we made up for it with poor tackling, kind of thing. That's the kind of team that we're right? First round picks that can't play. So the guy comes in here, the GM this year, they cut everybody. It was like Ron Rivera, guys, we gotta get rid of them. He changed over and recently this season, now they've cut first round picks. Well, they traded one. Jahan Dotson, a receiver to Philadelphia right before the season started. He's had, like, I think, like 6 catches total this year.
Yeah.
All these first-round picks over here from Rivera era, they couldn't play. And then Emmanuel Forbes, his defensive back from 2 years ago, just out of his league. And they're not just, like, holding on to him for – no, it's like, okay, you're gone. They're cutting first-round picks. That's how bad that team – they've changed. It's up to, I think, 6 – I did the math the other day. Like, who's left from that team a year ago? It's been a 62.8 or something like that percent turn, more than 60% turnover. Basically 2/3 of the roster is different than it was a year ago. You don't do that in the NFL and succeed. And they didn't do it with signing all these free agents like they used to, you know, the old owner spending a bunch of money on guys that can't play anymore. They didn't do that. They signed Bobby Wagner and Jeremy Chin. It's funny because Rivera used to bring all his Panthers guys in here and they all stunk, from, you know, the GM, the Marty Herney who joined him here, some of the players. He'd bring in these guys, oh, we're trading for Curtis Samuel, okay, and then he could never play because he's always hurt. So it was funny that it took Rivera to leave and the new coaches to come in to bring in two guys from Carolina that can actually play. One is Frankie Louvu, the linebacker, and the other is Jeremy Chinn, the safety, who have been a big reason that that defense has improved and their playmakers. So it's funny that Ron had to leave for good Panthers to come here. The difference is core. It's Quinn's done a great job. Look, he's an inspirational guy. He's a very positive dude.
Right.
He's a backwards hat wearing. He's that kind of guy. You know that, Tim, in Dallas. That's what he is. Players loved him in Dallas. Micah Parsons loves him. If the Cowboys can't come to terms with Micah Parsons, there's a seat for him over there in Asheville. He'd join Quinn in a heartbeat. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
Players love him, but he's that kind of guy. But he has scar tissue. All those guys do. His scar tissue is he had a 25-point lead. 25-point lead in a Super Bowl and doesn't have a trophy.
In the second half.
Because they played Brady 28-3. So until Dan Quinn ever gets back there and wins it, that's always going to be the cloud, right?
Right.
It should be. Now, not all his fault. That cloud is also shared by the coach in San Francisco. Kyle Shanahan,
correct,
who was the offensive coordinator.
Let's throw the ball.
Offense didn't
let's
do much the when they were. Yeah, so So that's shared blame, but he's also the coach, and so Dan Quinn's done a great job, and all this stuff. It's this positive attitude, and this all that's changed from, guys just didn't want to be here, and Ron Rivera, who would sit on the sideline. I don't know how much when you would watch him, Rivera would sit there with his arms folded and just look. It's like, are you awake? Hello, it's Sunday. Are you there?
Seeing what I'm seeing here? Yeah.
Right. I mean, it was just that vibe.
So what makes Daniels a young quarterback? What makes him
he's really
so much
good.
Better
so
than other Dan young Quinn's quarterbacks great, that fail?
He's smart. He's seasoned. He's accurate. Shall I go on? And he's athletically just as gifted.
But
as
he's still
Lamar
young
Jackson.
And raw. I mean, it's still a
yeah,
tough
but he's
thing.
Not
he's
not
the only
as
one,
young. Yeah. Right. He's not as young. So his history is, and he's really, we've seen all, but a lot of these young quarterbacks are playing well. Part of it is, the situation. I think the coaching staff has, it's a situation. If Jaden Daniels is drafted by Rivera 2 years ago, he's probably out of the NFL, right? I mean, that's
right.
Rivera used to get asked, well, what's the difference between your team? And it's a quarterback. Well, you're the coach and GM. How about get one? Sit this in. The difference is quarterback. Well, who's in charge of that, Ron? And they found one. That's it. But you find a quarterback in any level of football, you got a chance.
Yep.
They have a quarterback. Yep. Look at his numbers. He's done things that rookie quarterbacks certainly are not doing. And I could list them. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he's doing things that only veteran quarterbacks have done it in his first year, and they're bringing him along. He had that little issue against Carolina. He got tackled, had to leave the game. Mariota came in, finished up, and played well, by the way. Here's the other thing. Marcus Mariota has played well for two games. He said, what did that happen?
Nice backup.
All of a sudden, yes. Yes, he is. And you know that, Frank. I mean, that's a guy that I don't know if you've seen him, and he's come in a couple games. Like, is that Mariota really? He looks competent. Right. He looks confident. He's,
Tennessee is a quarterback-killing team.
He's not going to kill you. He's not the guy you want to start 17 games, but doing what he's doing, backing up that guy and being a mentor for – they're the same guy, right? They're the same guy, except Daniels is a better player. But Mariota, on top teams in college football, Oregon, Heisman Trophy winner, coming to the NFL to be the franchise savior, and it didn't work out. So that's another thing. That's part disgusting. Of that is the psychology. They bring him in as a backup, and I guess Quinn knows him from there was some history there with some other guys. They really wanted him in here. Anyway, but he comes in to be the mentor for Jaden Daniels, who is one of the top teams in college football, LSU,
and he's
Heisman
that
Trophy
kind of
winner, savior
up
of the franchise,
it.
Right?
He stepped
and
up
Daniels
and did it, too.
Yep. He did. He has been for a guy who, and there's other circumstances that last year, it didn't work out for him in Atlanta. So, that's the difference. They're having guys in like that. And that's all part of the team. But all the coaches, all the whatever, the key is five. Number five has changed this franchise. I've been covering them, and I've been a fan since, the first Super Bowl as a kid. I remember Super Bowl VII. I don't remember the, really the Huff day. I don't, that goes before me and Sam Huff and Lombardi were here and everything. I was alive, I guess, at that point, but I wasn't that one year. So that's when things started changing.
Okay.
But the team, the old school Washington fans had Sonny Jurgensen throwing 5 touchdown passes and all that. And
John David Crow
all the time. They were always, you know, so Sonny is always, Joe Theismann won an MVP and won a Super Bowl, and he's kind of the father figure of Washington football. He's our station a lot. I mean, he's just Joe's Joe. He's great. He is the gold standard as far as quarterbacks, but really the most talented guy in my lifetime and my dad's favorite quarterback always, Sonny Jurgensen, who's a Hall of Famer, right? And he could throw, you know, he's one of those guys with a rubber arm. He could just throw it, sling it, right? Jaden and I've had people that really know, you know, the history of the team, written, and already they're saying that Jaden Daniels is probably going to be the best quarterback that's ever played for this franchise. Now, you get some argument from, this is before television, Sammy Ball is a legend, right?
Oh, yeah.
That was
right.
Back in the days. They weren't wearing face masks and stuff like that. So it's hard to, you know, when you compare, but modern era franchise, modern football, he probably, and it's 1 year, I know, but he's that level of guy, because his numbers, a lot of his numbers are already top 5 in the NFL. The question with him, everybody's worried about, because he's a slim guy. He's not the biggest. Doesn't matter. I mean, how did that muscled up stuff work for Will Levis? Pretty good, huh? It doesn't matter what body type you are. And here's the thing. I always said, he's a kid that's played 6 years of college football. He's been this body type since high school. It seems he survived okay. And that's the thing. He got the little rib thing, and apparently he's a really tough guy, so not, that stuff is not bothering him at all. But he's just really accurate. And he's 70% really fast.
Percentage. Yeah.
For a rookie, and he's very smart. Kingsbury's a good coach. They've got a good system. He's getting better by the moment. Micah Parsons, after they played in Dallas when they won, when they beat him the first time, I played it from his podcast. Micah Parsons spent like 2 or 3 minutes talking about Jaden Daniels. He's like, I knew he was good. I didn't know he was that good. He said, that guy is faster than Lamar. And then he caught himself. He goes, as fast as Lamar. But what he didn't want to disparage Lamar. He said, Daniels is faster. And Daniels, during the Chris Sims interview, Football Night in America, a couple of weeks ago, and he played Atlanta. He did this whole lengthy thing with Chris Sims, and he was talking about his speed. He goes, you know, I used to race all these guys at LSU, all the receivers. He goes, I can say it right now. He goes, I'm faster than all those guys. So you're talking about, you know, Malik Nabers, all these guys, all these LSU guys that are killing in the NFL. He's that. That's what people are saying. He's got that speed. I know, but
if you're that fast, you don't have to have a big body, right? I mean, if you're that, nobody's going to touch you anyway.
I don't know how much you've seen of him there. And here's the other thing. He is so poised for a kid. He's a California kid. Guess what? Get used to that. See, I thought that when RG3 lit up the Cowboys in Dallas Thanksgiving Day, my in-laws are here. They're Cowboy fans. And I said, you better get used to this for 10 years. And then we know what happened. But that's you're right. And he's a chill dude. He's got that California and he's got that. And that's the way he plays on the field. And I've compared it. Look, everybody around here, and they should. Lamar Jackson's done a great job, but there's a frenetic kind of style. Of Lamar, he's darting all over the place. There's none of that with Jaden Daniels. There's none of it at all with Jaden Daniels. And he plays that way. You can see it. It's smooth. End of game. Okay, fine. He did 2 weeks ago the Atlanta game, and I was tweeting while it was happening. He did a Mahomes. He's at that level. You gave him the ball in overtime. You're not touching it. You're losing the game. Warm up the bus. Go home. Goodbye. He held the ball. Touchdown. Rookies aren't doing that stuff. And the better he gets, wait till 2 or 3 years. Mahomes didn't play his first season, remember? All the good stuff he did was his second season. Wait till they get an offensive line here. Wait till they get a receiver that's not named Terry McLaurin that can help out. You know, wait till they actually fix the defense, which they will. But they've done, you know, and so they're way ahead of schedule. My theory always was that the coaching staff, just by default, is going to be 1 or 2 games better. Okay, so they were a 4-win team. I said, coaching staff is better. That's worth 1 or 2 wins. The players, they completely gutted the roster. Like I said, it's more than half turnover, 60% plus turnover. So obviously there weren't a lot of good players. So that's worth one or two wins. And I said, and then Jane Daniels, just having a quarterback with his talent. I was with you. I don't know. Wasn't I with you after they drafted him? Didn't I tell you this all along? I've been telling people at work. Everybody wants to say, this kid can play. You watch. He can play. They're like, oh, okay, rookie, okay. Well, guess what? We found it. So I said, and Jaden Daniels, just having a quarterback is worth one or two wins. So that got you in the 3 to 6 win addition range. Let's say it was high end, 5 or 6, right, atop of the 9, right? So now we're, but I always said 3 or 4. You know, it won't be all 6. So add 3 or 4 to the 4 wins. It was probably a 7-8 win team. Flirt with 500. They're going to be improved. Flirt with the playoff spot would be an improvement. They didn't flirt with it. They won 12 freaking games. So, and I've gone on here lately, and I said, I underestimated Jaden Daniels. He's not worth 1 or 2 wins. He's worth 3 or 4 wins. He's that good. Now you get to that point, that's where your 8-win improvement comes from, because all that stuff has hit the top markers. 2 wins for coaching, 2 wins for the roster turnover. Jaden Daniels worth 3 or 4 wins. You turn a 4-win team into a 12-win team. He's that good, and it's not a fluke. I mean, how many times he has thrown a go-ahead touchdown pass in the final 30 seconds of a game or in overtime 5 times this season, which is more than any other quarterback since the merger. Not rookie, any other quarterback since the merger. 1970. Those things don't. So that's your other component too. That's the non-analytic component to it. There's something special about him, or something special has happened to the team with him. And you've got guys believing. You know how this stuff works. Confidence. We got a quarterback now. We believe. Look at what I mean. And Brady had a track record, but look what Brady did to Tampa that once. You know, when he was there, it was like, you know, the aura, you know, the angel seeing Tom Brady with the auric glow over his head walks in the door, and suddenly you're a Super Bowl champ. This kid's got some of that, and the way he plays, and he was around college football for a long time, Arizona State 2 years, LSU at the end. He redshirted, I guess, a couple of years, and then in Arizona State, then he transferred, and then COVID happened, so he got the extra year there. So he was in school 6 years, has been. Yeah, somewhat of a, well, why is a guy in college football that long? But he matured. He became a better player. Played under Herm Edwards at Arizona State. So he's talked about, you know, Edwards with advice and everything. And that situation didn't work out well, but for him it did. And, you know, as much as I like the knock on, you know, Brian Kelly and his, you know, fake Southern accent, you know, down there at LSU. It's that whole thing. But guess what? He helped him elevate his game, because they have that COVID year. And I've heard Kelly talk about this, that they kind of sat down. It's like, okay, we got this extra time. What do? We can make you a better player. What do we do? And you know what they did then? They added the running component to his game. He's not Lamar. He's not darting all over. Lamar is Barry Sanders, right? That can dart all over the place, make guys miss, spin, you know, guys are flying. Jaden Daniels isn't. You just see him, watch him. He'll go, like, turn the corner, and there's guys like, oh, he's going to catch him. And then you see start seeing him turn the corner, and the guys aren't catching him. But it's all smooth. I don't think he's really opened it up yet, his speed. He gets through with that smooth, I'm faster than you. I don't have to. It's like golf. He's not swinging 100% every time. He's swinging at, you know, 85 or 90.
Yeah.
When he really needs one and opens it up, and this is playoff time, I'm excited to see it, because you're right. That's his whole thing. But what Kelly did, they started working on, like, adding the run element, and it's not, he doesn't take off like a lot of young quarterbacks, and still a lot of quarterbacks in general, when there's pressure, I'm going to get tackled, sacked, I'm running. He doesn't do that. He runs. You see a lot of these are design runs. Their offensive line is still not great. It's improved, but it's still not great. A lot of that stuff that is happening is him. And there's just a smoothness. He just kind of goes up the field, and he's going by guys. That's just all smooth speed, and it's just a calm with him that a lot of quarterbacks don't have, and rookies don't ever. And that's what you're seeing with him, and that's what's happened. Mahomes does the same thing. If you watch him run, it looks like he's just, like, tiptoeing through that. Yeah. If you watch him sometimes, it's like, are you even running? It's like he's not trying to run, but he's just – guys are missing. He's just finding these little – gaps, these little spaces. And you saw, like, the week before, they all run together. You know, you get a 4th and 11, and he drops back, and then there's a seam, and he runs, and it's like 15 yards. It's easy. 4th and 11, and it's easy. they led the league. They're second in the league in third down conversions this year. I think they ended up number one in fourth down conversions. And it's not like they went for only two or three of them. They were going for like four or five a game. It was ridiculous. He's a cheat code. And you got to keep him healthy, because that guy in the NFL and now in the playoffs, those guys win games for you. And he's already won five. Mariota won one too. That's six for them. But at the end, he's won five of those games already, with last overtime drives, last minute drives against Philadelphia, Hail Marys. There's something about, and that's what wins games in the playoffs. Fluky things happen. One guy makes a play. One guy makes a run. One guy breaks free. And those win playoff games and can keep you in the mix. And that's who they have now. A player that, if they ever got to the playoffs, it was always, how do you stop this guy? How do you stop that guy? Now they've got a player that the other team has to worry about. How do we stop their guy? And yeah, their guy is the quarterback. And you're just getting started. So it's fun. Last time they won, though, they haven't won a playoff game since 2005. Guess where it was? Tampa. They always play. I've fucked this up. It's like, is it Tampa again, really? Chris Sims was the quarterback. Joe Gibbs 2.0, his second stint as head coach. The late, great Sean Taylor had a 51-yard fumble return for a touchdown. They jumped in front 14-0 at the one, I think it was 17-10. 19 years ago, last win in the playoffs. Maybe, you know, everything comes full circle now here. And Gibbs, by the way, Gibbs was an old Tampa Bay Buccaneers assistant. You know, the whole glory thing with Joe Gibbs is the father of this, face of the franchise, you know, Hall of Fame coach. Gibbs was the reason they drafted Doug Williams down there years ago in Tampa.
Yeah.
And Doug Williams won, and he's with the team still, Doug Williams as an exec. Doug Williams ends up with Gibbs back here. They win the Super Bowl in 87, 88. That was not, I've heard a lot of people compare it, and they might be true. It's the rookie season, but and so you never know. But this team, it's not Detroit. They're not stormed by people. They're not crushing people. They're not a defending champ like Kansas City. But that 87 team wasn't either. That was kind of an extra bonus for them winning that Super Bowl, their second one, with Doug Williams at quarterback, who was not the quarterback, you know, until late in the season. Gibbs had a hunch that year. It's like, I'm going to put you in. Jay Schrader was the quarterback. Doug Williams actually had been traded to the Raiders that year because he was not happy here. And he was packing up, getting ready to go. And Gibbs said, you know what, Doug? I've changed my mind. We're not trading you. Because it was Gibbs. You know, he has that talk, Joe Gibbs. I got a feeling we're going to need you at the end of the year. And he made the quarterback switch. Doug Williams has the greatest still quarter in Super Bowl history against the Denver Broncos. They win 42-10. This team's a lot like that. Like, it's not a great team, but it may have something special, something magical, but you got to win. You got to prove it. Yeah, and I'm not scared of Tampa. I'm fine with this team not having to go to 5-degree Lambeau Field. I'm fine with them going to 63-degree Tampa on Sunday night to play Baker Mayfield, who could be bad Baker Mayfield. You never know what you're going to get with him, right?
You never know.
Right. So never know. I know they've had a good year, and they lost to him in the season opener, but yes, there's a lot of things. I just did my entire Sunday show with you.
There it is.
I should have recorded this.
We'll send you the file.
Just put it on and get some coffee.
Fired up. Because it's not just like I said, it's not them just getting there. Oh, it's cute. And Taylor Heineke's the quarterback. They're playing Brady. And everybody's like, oh, well, they played really well. That was fun. They stayed in the game. I'm too old for staying in games.
Yeah,
you know, I need wins. I need Lombardi trophies there. I need, you know. The Nats that like actually sign people, you know, sign players, like spend money. The World Series is great, and teams around here do that. They win a World Series, like, okay, there's your title. Now we'll stink again. We're not going to spend any money. No,
take some time off.
This whole crew there, the ownership, it's fun because football is back in D.C. The fans have come back, which I always said, you start winning, and all that comes back. It's been a lot of fun, and they're just. It is weird that they are, because of the quarterbacking, national kind of media darling team, all of a sudden, everybody loves Washington. Everybody hated Washington. Everybody loves him. But that quarterback he's a face of the, not a face of the franchise guy. He's one of those face of the NFL guys. I mean, it seems to be. That's why they're in prime time.
Good luck. I know it means a lot to you and all the people in Washington. Yeah. And I mean that sincerely. Good luck because it's cool to see these teams have struggled a bit to kind of come back and make it more than just the same teams, right, every year. So
yeah. And that's
kind of cool.
That's it.
To see Washington.
And it works out for me because I once I'm done with work, I get to watch football Sunday night. So I want to thank the NFL for lining that one up for me late Sunday night so I can watch.
Earl, we appreciate your time as always and all your insight. Best of luck and through the playoffs as the the Commanders head towards the Super Bowl. Inevitably.
Yeah, another one.
We'll have you on again. Yep. We'll have you on again.
Okay. Sounds good, guys. Take care. And again, happy new year to everybody.
Yep.
And
same.
Look forward to the show.
We'll be listening on the call. Sony open.
Enjoy, Earl.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you.
Earl Forsey, voice of PGA Tour Radio. And as you probably guessed, if you didn't know by now, also a radio host in Washington, D.C., and has been for years and years and years, as his references will attest. When he goes back to Lombardi as a coach of the Redskins. There you go. We kind of knew Earl would be excited about this year. We've talked to him so much. And
I'm exhausted.
And hasn't always been able to brag about his team, you know.
We knew he'd be pumped. We knew he'd be pumped today. That's why we got him on. So.
And he certainly was.
Golf talk football.
There we go. So. All right.
There you go. Well, the Sony opened. Me too. The Sony. I've just been sitting here taking a nap, just listening, whatever. Sony Open, folks, is going to be great. It's going to be great scenery. I love.
That's what I think is cool about it. Yeah. Beautiful tournament. It's not nearly the course, and I say nearly. You've got more vistas, if you will. Last week at the Century,
as far as the
drone shots and over the cliffs and all the kind of things going on. This is a little bit more flat land, if you will, of where the Sony is being played at the beach there.
But it's pretty, pretty.
Nevertheless, it's beautiful. And the big W right behind the 18th green and everything with the trees.
You know the significance of that big W?
I do. As far as why it's spelled out like
it's from a movie. It's a wild world, right? World.
Starring like every famous person in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, every famous actor was in it. And that's where the treasure was buried, under that W.
Yeah. And they put those trees, they angled them that way.
Yeah.
That had Jonathan Winters.
Yeah,
it had Mickey Rooney. It had
Dean Martin.
Dean Martin, Joey Bishop.
Yeah. Sammy Davis Jr. You name it.
Buddy Hackett.
Was Jackie Gleason in it?
Was Jackie? I don't know. I think are you thinking of Jonathan Winters?
Yeah. I mean, everybody. Red Buttons.
Ethel Merman. People that nobody, unless you're old like we are, would even know who these people are. But
old.
Yeah, at that time, they were kind of the George Clooney's and Brad Pitt's of the time, right?
They were big movie
stars and comedians and everything else. And they're all in this one movie. Oh, you know what was in it? It was Spencer Tracy.
Spencer Tracy was in it. Yeah.
Among all this farce going on, and it was a movie about farce. I mean, it was just goofy, and that and everything. Yeah. Here's like one of these great dramatic actors, Spencer Tracy, in the middle of this whole crazy. It was a great movie.
It was a fun movie.
I remember all that stuff.
Saw that in the theater. Saw that movie in the theater, along with Paint Your Wagon in the theater.
Back
which
in
was
the
a
day,
great movie. Lee Marvin and Clint Eastwood.
Wow. Lee Marvin,
great old movie. Golf Talk America's gone off the rails, folks.
We have. That's okay. Thanks to Earl.
Hey,
Earl
got us there. The first show of the season. We're just getting our sea legs back. So
But it's good. It's good. I feel good.
Yeah, I feel good.
It's tired. It's good to hurl. It's good to hurl. Earl.
It's good to, hear Earl. Yes, it is.
Hear from Earl and on what he's doing and what's going on in his world.
Earl's
a
great guy. He was a big help to me when I first started in this biz. So big help. So.
Earl's been doing a long, long time.
He's you know what? He is the voice of PGA Tour Radio as far as I'm concerned, and most other people are concerned. I mean, when you don't have him as the anchor, it's a different. Different product.
Sound.
It really is.
Very different. Yep. Well, as we say goodbye, I want to wish everybody who's either in the middle of the blizzard conditions to be safe, take care of themselves. Anybody, God bless you if you're in Southern California and going through that, be safe and take care and evacuate. Nothing's worth saving like your life.
Nope.
So make sure that you get out if you need to get out. And we wish the best for all those people there. In the meantime, thank you to Invited Clubs. InvitedClubs.com is a website, our title sponsor. We appreciate everything they do. Check them out and become a member because you're never going to regret being a member at Invited Clubs. InvitedClubs.com, the website. For Earl Forsey and Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks for being with us. Remember to join us next time right here for Golf Talk America.